This year is the 200th anniversary of Mary Shelley's iconic book, Frankenstein. And to celebrate, ASU's Center for Science and the Imagination has put on a series of programs, talks, and events celebrating the legacy of the book and considering how it applies to our lives in 2018. And since we always love a good creature feature, we invited Bob Beard from CSI to transform the KJZZ studios into the Laboratory for Innovation and Fantastical Exploration, or LIFE, a fictitious lab run by Dr. Victoria Frankenstein, the great, 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 many greats granddaughter of Dr. Victor Frankenstein.
It's alive!
Bob Beard showed up in a white lab coat with a box of tools and supplies, and we got started making our own creation.
So I wanted to ask you just a few questions. What do you know about Frankenstein?
I've read the book.
Okay.
I have seen various incarnations, like Frankenberry, of course, makes me think of things. But no, I know it as a creation story. That's what I always think of. That there's a scientist who wanted to create something and in some cases sort of turn himself into God. That's my theory.
Sure. Okay. Well, Frankenstein, written 200 years ago this year, and it's really a story about, you're right, it's a creation story, but it's also a story about creative responsibility, right? So Victor Frankenstein was a student who thought that he could create new life, but really didn't think through the implications of that decision. So today I wanted to experiment and do our own little sort of Frankensteinian activity with you.
Okay.
So what we have here is a Scribblebot.
So let me explain. A Scribblebot is a strange looking creature. It's cylindrical and made of foam. It has markers for legs that are attached with rubber bands, and there's an electric toothbrush sticking out the top, but I haven't seen it in action yet.
So what we're gonna do, first of all, is we're gonna start with this pool noodle.
Then Bob handed me a 6-inch orange pool noodle to make the body of my Scribblebot. On the table in front of me were pipe cleaners, feathers, and those little googly eyes. And then I started to build my creature.
So what kind of feathers we want here?
What sort of personality do you think your creature is getting right now? You're going through...
I wanted to be open-minded and goofy, Bob. So,
okay.
Yes.
How are you going to display that in pipe cleaners?
I wanted to have a welcoming face. I'm not sure how to define that.
I've got some markers, too. If you want to just start drawing. Does your creature have a name?
I'm not going to restrict by that, Bob.
You're not going to name your creature.
I don't know. I don't think I want to yet.
Some would argue that that was Victor's flaw.
Really?
That he didn't name the creature. The creature didn't have a name. Victor always referred to it as a wretch or a monster. And so, you know, part of the creature's crisis was not having an identity.
My little nameless orange creature had two eyes, giant black fuzzy pipe cleaner ears, and a friendly looking face because I wanted him to be happy and smiley. And then I was ready to give him legs. I took a rubber band and attached three markers to my guy.
So people are creative, right? Like we've done a little act of creation right now, and there are scientists and engineers right now that are creating new things. And a lot of these things, especially in the moment that we're in, is about mimicking life or mimicking intelligence. So you've made a fine little creature. What do you say we take this to the next level and
give
it a spark of life?
Yes, yes.
In the novel, Frankenstein, there's a lot of hand-waviness about how actually the creature came to life. And of course, in the movies, it's a bolt of electricity. I thought we'd just use a toothbrush from the dollar store.
Wow.
Is that cool?
Absolutely.
All right, shove that down into your creature right in the top. Should we bring this thing to life? Flip the switch. The power is in your hands. Is it moving? It's doing it itself, isn't it? You want to say it with me? I know you want to say it.
It's alive?
It's alive! So let's see what it does. Let's see it express itself.
We sat and watched as my creature drew its own picture. Its marker legs danced around the page in red and yellow and green. It waved and swirled and made its own picture without any help from me.
What do you think it's doing?
Well, I guess this is almost like a Jackson Pollock painting, Bob. I love that it's just sort of moving in a direction we can't quite predict.
So that's interesting that you said it's like a Jackson Pollock painting. So if someone came into this newsroom right now and said, this is the most amazing piece of art I've ever seen, and I will give the artist $1 million, who do you think is going to get that money?
Oh, it has to be my creature, because otherwise I'd be put in a sanitarium, I think, if they thought that I did that myself.
So the creature is responsible for this positive outcome, $1 million piece of art.
Oh, I think so.
Okay. So let me flip that around on you. So if this creature turned itself on and just started scribbling all over the newsroom or over one of your colleagues' scripts,
right?
Who would be responsible?
Well, I mean, the responsibility, I was being facetious. The responsibility comes with the creator because I could have influenced this in some other way. I could have held on to it more tightly. I could have done something else. I could have come up with a totally different design. So in that sense, as the designer, I've determined its fate.
Okay. So do you think that scientists and technologists and engineers who are building things like self-driving cars, do you think that they think about these things? Do you think they think about who's responsible ultimately once it goes out into the world, once it's out of the design studio? And
I hope they think about consequences, sure, because it's not just, you know, we're not living in a vacuum, right? We need to have know that things are going to affect other people, other creatures, other buildings, whatever it may be.
Yeah, that's pretty insightful. You're sort of an inquisitive mind. You're someone that I think that we'd like to have join the Life Academy.
Bob handed me a sheet with a punch-out paper doll to make my own miniature Frankenstein monster and an invitation to be a lab assistant for Dr. Tori Frankenstein. I went to the website and signed up, and then I got this call.
Hello, this is Dr. Tori Frankenstein. I'm the founder of the Frankenstein Laboratory for Innovation and Fantastical Exploration, or LIFE as we like to call it. I wanted to reach out to you personally to tell you how thrilled I am that you've registered for the LIFE experience. Just by taking this simple step, you've shown yourself to be a curious, forward-thinking person, just the type we're looking for.
The program that Tori invited me to be a part of is actually an ARG. That's an alternate reality game. If the concept is new to you like it was to me, basically think about a game that looks and feels real, and maybe you sometimes can't tell when it is or isn't. It uses transmedia storytelling, which often includes phone calls, using the internet, and also problem solving in real life. It's all mixed together. The Frankenstein Life Experience is one of those, and it is a trip. And like the Scribblebots activity, it forces you to think through your responsibility as a creator. So I sat down with Bob to talk a bit more about this idea and the whole concept of ARGs.
Our Life Academy is sort of a mixed reality experience because we're doing this, partially in museums and partially at home, and then this online digital narratives. And so it sort of crosses media platforms, but it also goes in the real world and also into this digital idea, this immersive environment where you are recruited to be a research assistant in this fictional academy. And really, this is based off of transmedia storytelling, where our learners today, our young people, have been raised in these immersive story worlds like Harry Potter and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where they're expected to put the various pieces of a story together by crossing different platforms and going different places and collecting these ideas and then putting them together and sort of assembling them in a very Frankensteinian way. And so that's really the heart of this experience, is do activities at a museum, do activities in your own home, sort of guide your own learning, and then come back to this academy and find out what you've learned.
When we're talking about these, I want to come back to these big questions, because you're asking these major questions, and yet at the same time, you're still allowing kids to be kids, again, with that excitement of getting the phone message or creating and using an electric toothbrush and this sort of thing. I wonder again about the balance of things, because that must be kind of a fine line as well, because you want it to be fun, you want it to be comfortable, and yet at the same time, you want the larger questions to be addressed.
Yeah, well, I think, again, Frankenstein is fun. It wouldn't have endured for 200 years if it weren't a fun, compelling sort of playground to be in. And really, with today's learners and them being 21st century students, we're really dialing into their ability to access information efficiently and use it effectively, but also to evaluate information critically and draw their own conclusions. So, and also managing the flow of information from a variety of sources. And so in our experience, I think it's accessible, but it's also instructive because they're experiencing it in a very personal way.
When it comes to asking some of these big questions, the responsibility questions, the ethical questions, why is it important to ask these questions of kids, and how challenging is it understanding that even if they're inquisitive and they're interested in these things,
as kids, they may not have had to consider these things before.
Yeah, I think because Frankenstein is a 200-year-old story, but I think its themes are even more relevant today. You know, we're in a moment where we have access to tools and technologies to change the world in really big ways. You have high school students doing synthetic biology competitions, and there are libraries and makerspaces that have robotics workshops. So I think in a way we're sort of playing the long game, and we're implanting these themes in our younger audiences. And so once they move in their educational journey and they start building these things or even participating substantively online, they're already considering that these things don't happen in a vacuum, that they have a responsibility for the things they're putting out into the world, whether it's a robot or it's a post on social media.
Great. Bob Beard, always good to see you. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.